Seconded.
All right, I am going to move to start the
recording in progress.
I'm going to move to start the Champaign County Mental Health Board meeting Wednesday, June 12th, 2024. Can I get a roll call, please?
Lisa Liggins Chambers.
Present.
Chris Miner.
Present.
Molly McClay.
Present.
Joe Omosagie. Elaine Puencia.
Present.
Jen Straub.
Yes.
Oh, I see you now. Jane Spandle. John Paul Joachim.
Here. All right. With that, the next item is approval of the revised agenda.
There it is up on the screen. Well, there it is.
My apologies, the revised agenda that's on the screen has incorrect page numbers, but we're going to be able to get through this meeting. So,
is there a motion to approve the revised agenda?
So moved, Straub.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say motion. Those in favor have it. Motion passes. The next item is just the MHB timeline on pages 3 through 8. I don't know if Lynn, if you had any comments about that.
No big changes. We were hopeful about possibly skipping the August board meeting, but that is up to the board chairs. So that's
the board chairs this meeting and the board chairs next meeting.
The board chairs of the next meeting, I think. Yeah, so like August is usually a tentative meeting, but we could need it because the business to attend to in July will be mostly budget stuff.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. with that, we'll move to citizen input and public participation. All those are welcome to attend the board meeting to observe and offer thoughts during this time. We'll limit public participation to 5 minutes per person or 20 minutes total. If there's any individuals out in the public that would like to make a comment, now is the time. And then just press the mic and state your name.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Carlene Cardosi. I am the Chief Clinical Officer for Rosecrans and the Regional President for the State of Illinois. First of all, I'd like to thank the board for their continued support. We truly value our partnership with Lynn and our ability to have open and honest dialogue about ideas and programs. We also appreciate the continued support for many of the legacy programs that originated from Community Elements and Prairie Center. These programs have been staples in the community for decades, and the community is better due to the funding of these programs. The first announcement that I'd like to make is our ability to do an expansion of our substance use bed. So as you know, we do run a residential substance use treatment program. We are happy to announce that we have the ability to add 2 more substance use residential beds to our existing program. We know that the need for these services is great, and I also know that 2 beds is not necessarily going to enormously change the demographic of that. But at the same time, I do think it's part of a solution. And as a community, if we all own a piece, we know that it will continuously get better. There are a few follow-up items that I wanted to address. Last month, Melissa Pappas, Executive Director, shared the demographics of the staff that work in this region. There were questions that were asked, and I wanted to make sure that we continue to clarify. The Rosecrans Central Illinois leadership team, which includes clinical and operational leaders, is made up of 48% of people of color, 52 white. Our nursing team that serves our outpatient and residential programming for all of our behavioral health services is 100% persons of color. Our clinical staff, so those that serve our clients, this includes clinicians, master's prepared, licensed, and our case managers, are 40% persons of color and 61% white. The paraprofessionals and those with lived experience also serve our clients, majority in our communities line and in crisis, is 48% persons of color, 52% white, and our ES team is 50% persons of color and 50% white. We are proud of the diverse team that we have in Central Illinois and the services they provide to our community. I look forward to hearing about the diversity of other agencies who receive funding from the Mental Health Board and how that compares to Rosecrans. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else in the public that would like to make any comments? And just say your name as well. Press the mic. Sorry.
Just once? Okay. Okay. Good evening. My name is George Gibson. I am the team leader for the Crisis Residential Center here in Champaign. And I have been at the Crisis Residential Center for over a decade now. I started with the Mental Health Center in 2010. Then it became Community Elements, and now I've been with Rosecrans Behavioral Health for the past several years. And today I'm just here to provide an overview of the Crisis Residential Center, which is a voluntary program designed to provide a stable treatment environment to individuals experiencing a psychiatric crisis. Let's start with the importance of a Crisis Residential Center here. The CRC, which is the Crisis Residential Center, provides a safe and supportive environment for individuals experiencing acute mental health crisis, reducing the immediate risk of harm to themselves and others. CRC serves as an alternative to psychiatric hospitalizations, which can be more traumatic and less personalized at times. CRC helps decongest hospital emergency rooms and psychiatric units. Comprehensive care and support. CRC provides a range of services, including therapeutic, medication management, and skills training, addressing multiple aspects of an individual's needs. Our smaller setting of 10 beds allows for more personalized and intensive care than some of the larger institutions. Support and family caregiving. Families of individuals in crisis can experience significant stress, so CRC offers them respite and assurance that their loved ones are receiving professional care. CRC often provides resources and education to those families, enhancing the overall support of the system for the individual. Community integration and recovery. CRC focuses on helping individuals stabilize and reintegrate into the community, promoting long-term recovery and independence. Prevention of future crisis. The CRC program focuses on teaching skills and coping mechanisms to help individuals manage their mental health and prevent future crisis. The staff at CRC receives weekly instruction from a trained DBT therapist, which is the center point of our program, the dialectical behavior therapy. CRC often connects individuals with ongoing community resources and support services, ensuring continuity of care after their stay. We believe that by addressing the mental health crisis effectively, CRC contributes to the overall well-being and health of the community and effective crisis intervention can reduce instances of homelessness and criminal behavior associated with untreated mental health issues. So in summary, Crisis Residential Center supports individuals in crisis, reduces the burden of an emergency and inpatient service, provides comprehensive and personalized care, and enhance the community health and stability. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else in the public that has any comments? Is there anyone online that? No. All right. With that, we'll move on to the chairperson's comments. You know, obviously, the last few meetings, we had a lot of difficult decisions to make. I do appreciate all the hard work that all the agencies put into the applications and, you know, the thoughtful decision making that board members, you know, made in deciding how to allocate funding this year. I know it's not easy. I know in previous years we had easier choices to make, and I think this is going to probably be more standard. I think, you know, I'm glad that we have the board members that we have. I feel like people do make thoughtful decisions and are trying to make the best decisions for the community. So thank you, everybody, for all everyone's hard work. And with that, I'll move on to Lynn's comments.
I have no comments. This is a, like, it's, it was already like an information packed packet, trying just to, at least to give you some starting points for some of the discussions that are obviously important to us. They don't, we don't even need to take them up today, but I thought it'd be good to give you some things to react to, whether you do today or later. And then, lo and behold, we actually do have some business and a report from the evaluation capacity building team. So I think that's enough comments, except to remind folks to please sign in the chat with your agency affiliation, if any. And if you're in the room, I think you guys all did it. And also, if you're in the room, there's water and individually wrapped snacks. Okay, that's it.
Okay. With that, we'll move on to the approval of the Mental Health Board meeting minutes on pages 21 through 32.
So, this is a question for our staff team. Maybe Kim Bowdry is on the Zoom and can help me. Someone contacted us to say that they were missing from one of the sets of minutes, and I wonder if that is the May 22nd meeting minutes, or if you remember, because I can't remember. But we want to include everyone. So
it was Patty Walters.
Was it the May 22nd Mental Health Board minutes?
Yes.
Okay. So that was the information I wanted to share with you. There you go.
All right. So I guess I'll move to add an amendment to the, or a correction to the May 22nd amendment to add Patty Walters as other, under others present as DSC. Do we need a second for that, or is it?
I will second.
All right. All those in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Those in favor have it, so that is added. Any other additions or corrections that anyone sees? If not, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I move to approve the May 15th and May 22nd minutes of the Champaign County Mental Health Board as amended.
I will second the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Those in favor have it. The motion carries. We'll move on to vendor invoice lists on pages 33 through 39. Thank you. Any questions, comments about the list?
Yeah, what is the on the first page the check to Angela Fox? What is that? It's like four or five down from the top. I think this is rent for the, there's a storage unit for all the expo stuff, and we actually, we went to a smaller and cheaper unit, like, our staff moved things like the day before the rent amount was due. So this is a lower amount than we have been paying. I do not recognize the name Angela Fox, but unit A17 is our expo storage unit. And that's an annual rental amount. Okay, thank you. Well, maybe a couple days before the rent was due. But it was, like, just in the nick of time. Yay! And maybe some volunteers came to help, too. I'm not sure.
All right. With that, I'll move to approve the vendor invoice list. Is there a second?
I second it.
With that, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Those in favor have it. We'll move on to staff reports.
Do we need a roll call for that? Because
No, because it's already money spent. So that's okay. A good question. But yeah, since it's already money spent, we don't need a roll call. so with that, we'll move on to staff reports on pages 40 through 74. It was nice to see all the information of what other agencies were doing.
Yes. Yeah. Do you want context?
Yeah, you can go ahead and give context.
Is it okay with Chandra?
Yeah, or Chandra can give context.
Hello. So this summary is just a report. Some of the questions that board members were asking concerning what the organizations were doing to provide engagement. I wanted to show the board that they are already reporting this to us quarterly. So I went in and kind of pulled out all of the information that is actually being reported on and also captured in their application. A couple of observations. People were utilizing the clone service of the application system. So they hadn't updated things like Center for Women in Transition. So it was like kind of nice to like finally see a lot of that like come out. So it was kind of like an update and just conversation. And so when you go through and if you happen to see something that like, oh my gosh, we didn't mean to put that, you can just reach out to Leon or myself or Lynn and they'll just open up the system and then you can take it out so that you just won't be accused of putting things that just aren't actually happening. Because Center for Women in Transition has been gone for a very long time. The other thing I also wanted to point out is engagement of underserved and underrepresented populations should always include outcomes of what is actually being done. And so if you ever want to know, okay, well, how are they engaging in their reports quarterly, they actually report community service events, and Leon provides those as well. And in the notes, they may talk about that in detail, but they're not required to report the actual each and everything, but they do record, they do report the community service events as well. So just wanted to give you just an overview of their interagency collaboration, how they serve and underserve and engage underserved populations, how they serve them. And then also I provided a summary of their second quarter trainings. And then in September, when they've completed the entire report of their cultural competency plan, I will then go back and look at information to kind of match what their actions are and then provide another extensive report. But that will probably be in September or October. Any questions?
Thank you, Chandra.
Yes.
Is this information that we didn't have when we were here a couple weeks ago discussing funding or issuing funding? Is this new or?
No, it's actually not new. It's just more like clear because it was all a summary of what was on the applications. So if you look back at the summaries, you will notice where it says engagement of underrepresented populations, where that's actually highlighted there. And then in addition to that, what may not be in there, if I'm honest, are the actual trainings. With the CLC summary, I will just say they met the requirement of actual agency and annual training. Yes.
So just to expand on your answer, those program summaries that were in the board packet, those are written by us about what we've seen, but you have access to all the application materials and also all the previous reports. There's a wall now archiving some of the older reports, but it's easy to get them. I have to get them. I don't know. We can go way far back and we can claim some really big data, but then we also have to talk about the problems with interpreting data, of which, you know, it's one of those bottomless pit conversations. But this type of data, this narrative data that Chandra is collecting through the semi-annual reports and then in the comments of the quarterly reports, is much easier to access. So it's really about feeling confident going in that system or just telling us, could you go in that system and get it for me? Because it's easy for us to get it.
Yeah. Now, are we comparing over time results of the data? So are we looking at improvements too?
So from my lens, and I've been in this role for about 14 years, it has definitely changed and transformed. But that was because there were systems put in place so that it could point to something. So when the Mental Health Board initially started cultural competency plans and this type of reporting as a requirement, we had some people writing a paragraph up to 30 pages, and it wasn't really connected to things foundationally. And so that is why the National Cultural and Linguistic Appropriate Services Standards, why their actions should match and connect to those particular standards. And remember, it's based on an organization's capacity, not necessarily what I want or what anyone else wants, but really based on their capacity, based on their staff, and also their ability. So in my role, I do provide them technical assistance and support on ways that they can expand their engagement, different things that they may not have thought about. And I have personally worked with Prairie Center pre-Rosecrans to begin looking at what that transformation had looked like. And so I wanted to, that's just an example. And that was because I was personally contracted through Prairie Center for about a year and a half. So just wanted to kind of give you that perspective. And so now we're looking at just the things that have transformed and transpired over the years.
I find all sorts of problems with using the going backwards and doing comparisons of the data, and we should get together and talk about that, because I still think there's value in creating summary reports for you, but they have to include information that might be really obvious to me but isn't to others. We had a kind of a meta study done by a university group, and they found that our data, like, sort of, we're just sort of missing services to youth for about 6 years. And I was like, oh gosh, I forgot to tell you guys that we had federal funding for 6 years for those programs. Oops. So we actually we're doing better with youth, and particularly with Black youth, during those 6 years. But it looked terrible in our data. So it's often, you know, just like we have to do the analysis first, present it to you, realize what chaos it is, and then go back and find the background information that explains it well. So it is a journey we can sure go on.
Yeah, and it's just like I said with the organizations that people list. We clone our applications for agencies every year. And so if they clone it and they see, like, whoever is doing it may not know or does not know, like, to update it, they wouldn't have known to pull out Center for Women in Transition because it was an acronym, and they may not have known it.
So having said all of this, does that mean that the demographics were incorrect in the booklets that we received before funding?
Okay. No, not at all.
But
so
you can
that
also
was accurate.
Mm-hmm. That was accurate. But you can see the impact of things like if the board, for example, which they did, stops funding a prevention program, which may not even be, you know, many digits as dollars, a prevention program that reaches thousands of kids and is doing it through the schools so the demographics are more representative of the county. Like, if that's gone from the data, then the aggregate data look bad. But they're not bad, because what happened was a shift in investing in more intensive services, i.e. psychiatric services for children. So we have to be able to give you the background explanation, so it'll go on and on and on. But no, the data were correct. Yeah. The data repeated what the agencies had reported to us. I grabbed it from the system through a tool that goes into all their prior reports.
Any other questions? Okay.
With that, we'll move on to new business. So we have the legislation revising the Community Mental Health Act on pages 75 through 77.
You don't have to do anything about it except know that our annual reports no longer have to be late. They've extended, given us more time to get the annual reports done. They are mostly audited financials from the most recently completed fiscal year, and that's become really difficult for auditors all over the state to do within the old timeline. So, yay, new timeline. That's the most immediate benefit from these changes, extending the deadlines. There is now language in the statute about what qualifications for a board member, like, different from the previous qualifications, which were really kind of skewed toward healthcare. Sorry. and now there's even language about lived expertise. So that's kind of nice. There's one thing that I didn't list in here, but Jen Straub, you will love this. The act is now clear as to whether a county with the executive form of government, it is the executive who makes the appointments or the board chair. After you all spent a lot, it is in there. Oh, great. So the Champaign County spent a lot of money to answer that question in court, and then through legislation, it is now solved for Will County's sake. So, yay. It is in there. Thank you. Anyway, so it's this is kind of a big win in a lot of ways. This is like a bunch of stuff that was bothering 708 boards around the state. We got it fixed. So.
Is it okay to make a comment? I just wanted to note the second to last bullet point about vacant seats may be filled in the same manner as original appointments with the advice of the board, that being sort of an allowance might, I was wondering any thoughts on like what that could mean for the board.
This came from a legislator who had been on a mental health board before, who really thought that the mental health board should be able to speak to the appointing entity about candidates. So we were really careful about, this is not the staff, this is board members. So I don't know if we would want to have some kind of intergovernmental agreement that outlines a process or a structure for that, but it's pretty open-ended. So
yeah, I think it's interesting how this legislation creates some new provisions for like ways we should think about board composition, as well as like kind of who weighs in on who becomes a member of the board. I found that interesting. And I understand, Lynn, that you worked very hard on a lot of this through a position that you have. And I just wanted to thank you for your work in expanding some of the provisions for the mental health boards across the state.
It started with the first thing, the election issue, because that affected Champaign County immediately and adversely. It was changes that they made last year that they didn't mean to have this impact, but it gave us a problem. So I wrote that revision, and then I wrote the thing I'm especially proud of is the third bullet point under further changes, which is about workforce shortages. I wrote that as well, and I wrote that using what we have learned from students that we've worked with over the years and from needs assessments and from state and national association meetings, that the kind of educational supports people really need are not necessarily scholarships and loan repayment, but assistance paying for certification and licensure fees or stipends to go back to school and live while they're working on an MSW. So this is an opportunity. I think you would still want to create some structure under that, which would be specific to each community and each 708 board. But I was really proud of that because I felt like that came directly from input that we have sought here. So anyway.
Any other questions? All right. With that, we'll move on to the three-year plan timeline on pages 78 through 112.
I'm already talking way too much. I'm so sorry, John.
You're good.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This is to fix a technical problem. It's really not a problem. The Mental Health Board is required by law to create a plan every 3 years from which it then does annual updates. And that here is in the form of the annual objectives to that strategic plan and also the funding priorities, which get updated each year flowing from this. And so we have a three-year plan that we need to redo the end of this year to create a three-year plan to start next year. But we're also working with a group of other entities in Champaign County who also have an obligation for three-year plans or five-year plans. And we have a shared community needs assessment, which was launched June 1st, and it's making the rounds, and we're waiting for the French language version of it. So we won't have the results from the community needs assessment, health needs assessment, until like later this year, not in time to use to inform a new strategic plan for this board, and everybody else's strategic plans don't start till 2026. So my question to y'all is, if we were going to create a bridge to 2026, if you like the idea of getting ours timed with theirs so that we can use the data from the needs assessment report, I thought of two ways to do it, and you also don't have to do it. But one way would be a one-year plan with one-year objectives. The other way would be simply extend the current three-year plan but update the objectives for next year. So that's, anyway, that's too many words. Sorry.
So, I mean, you know, we can all discuss this. I'm fine probably with the first motion of just extending the current three-year plan for another year so that we can use the needs assessment for the following three-year plan, but I'm open to discussion.
Yeah. I also like the idea of extending the current plan rather than making a special one-year only plan. That seems like potentially a lot of work.
Yeah, I think that extending it makes the best sense since we have no new information.
I guess with that, is there a motion to extend the current three-year plan?
I motion to extend the current three-year plan.
All right. With a revised one-year objective for 2025 as a bridge to the new three-year plan for 2026 to 2028, is there a second for that motion?
I will second.
All right. This one we can do a voice vote, or do we need a roll call? I forget. Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. The motion carries. All right.
So then the next million pages are, this is the kickoff of the community health needs assessment. And it's, I don't know what will happen with the assessment itself or the partnership, but I feel our values are so well aligned with those of public health and United Way that hopefully we'll get somewhere with the people we really want to hear from. We might not be asking enough questions, but it is very difficult to do any kind of assessment like that in this community. People feel over-surveyed. So wish us luck.
Are you saying we ask too many questions?
And the university will pay them better than we can pay them to answer the questions. So
what's the going rate?
I know. It's like maybe $20 and a pizza or $50. And, you know, we just... This is a very over-researched community, and we did get feedback about that the last time. And Leon was going door-to-door working with people and really heard some powerful feedback about these, right?
Right.
Well, maybe if we bring them the pizza before the survey, and then they eat it, and then they do the survey, and then we can give them something after in addition to the...
I think Lynn said it well. Many of the people that I spoke to when I went canvassing were very irritated by my presence because there were others prior to me being there asking similar questions. So it was just the redundancy, and then the bigger issue question was, what's going to happen next? You know, and so that's the million-dollar question. So now that you have your questions answered, what's going to happen next?
I was at the Community Coalition meeting just before I came here, and they encouraged everyone to take a flyer, which has a QR code, and to fill out the survey, which will take about 12 minutes, it says here. So... That was one of the, they did a little presentation of all these pages. And anybody can do it.
Does it say there's going to be some kind of reimbursement on?
No. So we worked on the survey. We're not the main author of the survey. It's a physician who's been writing it for many, many years and really protects it. You know, it's focused on what the hospitals need to know. So the questions we were able to get in there, like I think if you take the survey, you'll know which questions came from us. And we couldn't get more than those. It got it got sort of heated when we tried to push for much more. So to start, we'll need to use secondary data as a result, you know, to really answer some of the questions that you all might have. Okay.
I think you just guaranteed that all of us will now take the survey just to kind of parse out which questions were ours.
Elaine, would you pass that flyer around so we could grab the QR code? I also am impressed by the specificity of 12 minutes, which makes me think it might actually be accurate.
Any other questions, comments? Or?
I need to stop talking.
No, you're good. You're good. I mean, the next thing is the election, so.
That's a very different topic.
Yeah, very different. All right. So I guess with that, we'll move on to the election of board officers on pages 113 through 117.
Dr. Yukim, can I make a clarification?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
That this survey is not just for any, it's for every single person in Champaign County. So don't just think about the people that you're serving. You're getting served too. It is inclusive of every single body in this room.
All right. So here we are at the election of the board officers. So, you know, the board annually selects from its membership a president and a vice president. The board bylaws are included in the packet, and we have to make a decision. Go ahead, Lynn.
This is, we had, there's some, what the heck? Okay. Some confusing. Yeah, okay, okay, good. I'm sorry. I got confused. We shifted it. A couple of years ago, well, I think Joe was the president when we shifted the timing. So the election today sets officers to begin July 1st. So it's a little different, like the DD board offices are effective immediately because they have to do it. By law, they have to do it in the middle of July or whenever in July. So anyway, just, I got myself confused, but yes, it's for July 1st. And you can only serve for 2 years in a row in a particular office.
So this was already my second year, so I cannot be president. I know, very sad, right? Yeah. With that, we can make nominations now for president and vice president. If anyone would like to make a nomination, you can, and we can discuss it, and then we'll take a vote at the end.
I'd like to nominate Molly McClay for president.
I will second that nomination. Is there any other nominations for president or vice president?
Is anybody else interested?
Yeah, that's true. Is anyone else interested?
I don't want to nominate somebody without knowing. I'm cool with Molly, but yeah. I mean.
Yeah, if there's no interest in vice president, I'm willing to do vice president, but
I was going to nominate John Paul Yuakim as vice president because technically you are allowed to serve as vice president now.
Do we need a second for that?
I can second that.
Is there anyone else that would like to be nominated? No? All right. I guess we'll do one at a time. So we'll do, vice president and president first. So all those in favor of John Yuakim as vice president, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Those in favor have it. The next nomination is for president. We have Molly McClay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. All right, those in favor have it. So, Molly McClay, you will be the president for our next meeting, and I'll be vice president for our next meeting. Congratulations.
So you can, the board can choose other offices
yes.
as well. Yeah. So You could be
I was joking. I don't want any more responsibility at all.
So now I want to surprise John with the information that because your term as president continues till July 1, you still get to sign all those contracts. Sorry.
Which contracts? Are they?
All the contracts Leon is working on.
Well, I won't be here after Wednesday next week, so you till July, so you better send them before then. No.
The vice president.
I'm just not going to be in the country. But
Well,
Molly can sign. Yeah, if I'm not present. So
I know this seems like kind of off the topic, but I'm really glad that we are talking about this because we really do have a lot of contracts coming your way. Somebody, we want someone to sign them so we can start paying on the contracts.
So with that, we'll move on to the agency requests, and that's on the addendum.
So this is a request to release the payments that we've been holding while we're waiting for an audit. So we don't have the completed audit. There's a letter from the agency director, and she's also available on the Zoom to speak to the issues. But the request is simply to release the remaining held payments prior to receipt of the audit.
And then just for clarification, this was not an agency that we voted for funding for any application this year. There was one that we had continued funding from previous application, and so that's why their audit wasn't something that came up during the application.
They're not funded this year.
Oh, yeah, no, but they, yeah, but we didn't, oh. We didn't vote for any funding for an application this year because they didn't apply for an application this year. So that's why their audit did not come up during the funding of the applications.
I had a question. So the total amount would be for the March, April, May, and June of 2023 payments. Would those be the remainder of the payments that so after that they would not be do any payments from us because the funding ended with that June 2023?
To clarify that, so the money's accounted for. It's not like we're not taking it from somebody else. The money's there. We're just releasing it. Oh, yeah.
That's a good question. And sometimes I structure these memos to have a budget impact section. I neglected to do that in this case because I was doing it really fast. But the budget impact is neutral because we have already budgeted for it and it's held, yeah.
So just for clarity, the audit that they just turned in for 2022, is that the one that we're waiting for, the 2023 one?
Both.
So, but for the funding for this funding, we need both?
No.
We just need the 2022 one? Okay.
So the program year 2023 audit would, it being late, would cause us to withhold PY 2024 payments, but the agency did not apply for funding for that year either. So we're not holding anything related to that one.
So, you know, with that audit being done, when do you guys take a look at it and review it? The 2022?
It's not
done. I thought they said we are done with 2022 and they're ready to start on the 2023 audit immediately.
We don't have it yet. Yeah.
I think it says, with this team, we hope to complete the audit soon. When we're done with 2022, they're going to start 2023.
I just read we are done. So, thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Yes, I mean, for me, I would not feel comfortable releasing then all the funding without having the audit complete, you know, because that is a criteria. And I want to be fair across the board. I'd want all agencies to have the same expectations, you know. So I'm open to discussion for what people would like to proceed or how they would like to proceed.
So just like I'm 5 years old, I need this explained. So on the vendor, all the checks that we saw, the checks for WIN recovery for January 24, February, March, that's a different year?
This is well experienced.
Oh, well experienced. Yeah. I looked at that W and I was really confused. Okay, never mind.
I'm inclined to agree with John, although they definitely make a great case for why this money is needed and how the audit has become a really sticky situation for this agency who does incredible work for our community. You know, we have our own need for accountability as a board, and part of that is getting all of these audits. And so I do worry that setting this precedent could be a dangerous one, and also leads to the whole, like, what then is the reward for getting the audit in, which is not questioning anybody's integrity, just as a board, when we look at our policies, I'm not sure that this makes sense.
I wanted to clarify to make sure I'm remembering correctly. Have there been any times in the past where an agency has made a similar request and we have released payments while still waiting for the audit? I guess this is a question for anyone who remembers, and or Lynn. No, we have not.
For this agency, we released January and February payments in order to help pay for the audit because they were getting a much more thorough audit, which was also costing something like $18,000. So I think that's right. This has been a year or so, but that's the only time that I remember. But.
At least from my recollection of being on the board, there have been other agencies, and I haven't remembered releasing payments for other ones.
Where we, in the past, we more like continued to hold the payments. I agree, because this would be releasing the end of any payment that they would get from us, that there is a concern about then, you know, what would prompt them to complete the audit if all of the payments have been received. That said, I also want to note that I think this agency has shared a lot about what they've learned in the process and did not request further funding from us, given in part some of the sort of lessons learned about the auditing process. So I just wanted to like make note of that they haven't continued to ask us for additional money, given that this is in progress.
I've ranted many times on these audits. I love this organization. I know Stephanie, but yeah, these audits got to get done. I don't know if we need to give people more support to get these audits done. If we can do that, I don't know what's going on, but it's just, you got to give us paperwork.
So I know, like, in the past, obviously, I think we talked about it before, just, you know, the price, there aren't as many people that can do this work, and then they have to pay them more to do it, and that was one of the reasons why we increased how much they can spend on the audits. So hopefully, we were hoping that solves things in the future. Obviously, you know, there's still going to be some hurdles, just getting people that can do this work. You know, I think the only other thing I would add to this is the only thing I would think would make me want to give some of the money would be if the agency says they need some funding for a specific purpose to accomplish the goals set out. Like, we released the January and February payments because they needed that money to complete the audit, for example. So if there was some reason they needed it urgently, I would be willing to hear that. But otherwise, I think I'm okay with holding off until the audit has been completed and turned in and staff has had time to review it.
And don't they kind of cover that right at the page break? We did face some challenges concerning completing the audit, but this was due to factors beyond our control. We had spent a significant amount of money on a company to do work that was never done, leaving us with little funds. Maybe they're more specific there.
I understand that situation. I don't know if the agency wants me to talk about that publicly, but I can say briefly that was not audit. That was money they spent to get their books in order, in audit-ready order, and it didn't. What they were paying for didn't happen, and that's a very serious issue because it's someone that I before that would have recommended, and now knowing that it went so sideways for this agency, I'm not comfortable making any recommendations at all. But that wasn't, like, if I understand what she's talking about in the letter, I think that's the loss that she's talking about. It was a real setback.
And that's really sad and unfortunate to hear. You know, again, like, if the agency wants to make a request for a specific amount of funding to be released for a certain reason, I'm definitely willing to hear that.
I'm not sure if I'm able to speak. Am I able to speak at this time?
Yeah. I think we can make an informed decision. I'm fine with the agency speaking on the matter.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate you all hearing me. And I also want you to know that I totally understand your concerns, and whatever decision you make, I will respect that because I know this has been quite a bit of time. And as Lynn was saying, I did start this out not understanding. It's our very, very first audit ever. I didn't know what the audit process would be like. I jumped in as a service provider wanting to do amazing work and not knowing what this was going to take and how this would take away from how this would affect us as an agency of me not knowing. And very late in the game, when I realized all that it was going to take, I did reach out to some mentors that tried to help us. So as Lynn was saying, we connected with a financial accounting agency that actually put us in more of a bind, and we spent a lot of money and did not get anything that we requested. And actually my board and the CPA we have working with our organization now is pursuing them to see if we can get some of the funds we paid to them back now that we have proof of the things that they agreed to do and never did. And that is something that we have had to kind of put on hold while we work through this because the audit is such a pressing issue. So with that happening, we jumped back in and we did hire a different agency. My board finally found a CPA that's willing to work with us. And when I tell you, she has jumped in and done amazing things. And we were able to share with Lynn our progress and add her to some of the updates so that she is aware. So the auditor we are working with and the CPA that our board found that's working directly with the Well Experience they have told us that our audit should be done by July 30th. That is what they have told us. And that is the information that I am going with. However, also, as Lynn said, with us, with what we lost trying to get it done and how it has affected our ability to do so, we have been put in a bind, for the funds that you are holding, we already allocated and we paid out, and because we needed to pay those funds out and make sure they were complete as part of that budget. And we did that from like program fees and the funds that would have been allocated elsewhere. So, and also from the little fundraising we were able to do. And I was hoping this year our fundraiser would put us over, but it did not. And we are left in a bind that has affected us with payroll, has affected us with, I mean, just to be honest, with even keeping the doors open. And the Well Experience is an amazing organization, and what we do, we are integral. And I feel so bad that this attacks our integrity. My goal has been to make sure that you all and other organizations that fund us know that it has nothing to do with who we are. It was more about what we didn't know. But I do know so much now, and moving forward, it will be different. I do understand and get the fact that you have released funds to us, and I know that if it is challenging to, if it is, you know, something that you cannot do, I totally understand, and I get that. Without seeing anything, it would be hard to say that you believe that when you give us the funds that we're going to complete that. As I have made it clear to Leon and Lynn, I value my relationship with the Board of Mental Health, and I hope that once this is over and we get the 23, and we've already been giving our items for the 2023 audit, so and she has agreed that as soon as this is done, she's jumping right in to start the next audit. So my goal is in the future to restore our relationship and to come back to a place where I do have you all as a partner. So whatever your decision is, we definitely will go with that. We were just hoping, you know, we wanted to make the request at least just to see what you, if it was possible. And if not, we will still work on getting this done and get everything to you and move forward, because I do love working with you all and I definitely want to restore our relationship. Thank you.
I talk a lot about funding smart organizations, and I'm going to change my stance, and I want to fund them. I want to release the funds. I'm not being a softy, but I haven't explained to me like that. That's a screwed up situation. So, of course, I'm just one, so we'll see how y'all feel.
I want to join on to that, and I'm open to kind of thinking about, like, how much of the fund, if we want to release everything they're requesting or part of what they're requesting, but I appreciate the transparency. And I also think this is an organization that I would really like to see continue to provide its excellent service to the community. So I would be in favor of at least releasing half of what they've requested. And I could definitely be convinced to do more if other board members would like to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they gave a good explanation of what the issue was, how they've corrected it, the plan that's set forward. There's very open communication between them and the board and staff. You know, and we want smaller agencies. I know we've talked about this in the past, how we don't want monopolizing the resources in town with just big organizations. We want small organizations to hopefully then grow and become, you know, big parts of the community, or services in the community. And so I think, you know, especially for a young organization, there's always a learning curve. And it's hard to not know what you don't know until things happen. I agree with everyone. I'm fine with releasing half, I think, the payments, and then holding the other half until the audit is turned in. But I'm open to what other people have to say. But, yeah, Chris, you have a question.
Hey Stephanie, if we were to release half of this to you now, then the rest after we get that audit, will the half bail you out enough? Or are we still, I mean, the rest will be coming as long as you hold to getting us the other audit. But will that be enough?
Chris, that would definitely get us over this hump I am in right now, and it would definitely help us. Yes, sir.
Cool.
I don't want to see an agency close, especially one that works with children. Given the fact that I'm a child psychologist myself, I can't. You know, this is not my heart. This is my heart, but I'm also empathetic, Stephanie. You know, there are times when we you know, we do these things for the goodness of the greater good, and then somebody screws us over. So I would not want to see your agency close because someone did not take care of you and your agency in the way that you deserve to be taken care of. I am familiar with your program. I appreciate your program. You all do good work. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't want any agency to close, especially the smaller ones in Champaign County. So I'm, as long as the audit is going to be done by July, I'm okay funding them fully, okay? Because I, and this could be Rosecrans, this could be, you know, Wind Recovery. I just don't want them to close, but I do want the demographics to get better. You know, breaking down percentages for how many people of color work for your company does not solve that problem for me, because there's still low numbers with regard to who some of these agencies are serving in Champaign County. However, I don't want any of you to close, and that goes for your agency as well. So I'm all for funding them fully because I believe that they'll get the audit in July. But I'll defer to all of you. If you think it should be half, then it's half.
I'm full with you.
I think that the only, like, I want to fund fully. The only question is then, does that set a precedent for other agencies?
I think personally, and you know, tell me what you guys feel too. I think it's case by case. You know, since I've been here, I heard various things such as we'll go ahead and fund this agency, or we'll give them a contract for a year as opposed to 2 years. So the way I view it is that we're doing it case by case. You know, even if a larger agency came and had some of the same stumbling blocks that Stephanie's agency has had, I'm probably going to feel the same way. We can't have Rosecrans closing. We can't have Wind Recovery closing. You know, we have to help the agencies. So I, speaking for myself, would still view it as case by case. Now, having said that, you know, when we have a new audit coming up, I mean, we can't keep doing this every year. You know, you have to get those audits in on time.
So the only thing is they're not applying for new funding right now. And then the only way we can hold them accountable is to hold some of the funding right now. Because if they don't turn in an audit, not that I don't believe they will, because I believe they will, but if they don't, there is no incentive once we release the money. They don't, I mean, they should turn in the audit, but if they don't, other than just not being able to apply for funding in the future, we don't have any other way to hold them accountable, is my conundrum.
I think not being able to apply for funding from us again kind of is.
Yes, I was going to say that. That's. Yeah. I can't stress how much I really appreciate my relationship with you all. You all, I like connecting to you all. I like the support we were able to get. I love having Chandra Lynn and Leon available to assist me and help me when we need support. And this is the support I don't want. I really hope to have a long-standing relationship with you all. So I do understand what you're saying when you think of, oh, if we give it to them, maybe they won't do anything, you know, but. And I know it doesn't matter if I say that's not who we are and that's not who I am. But I want my relationship with you all restored. And the only reason I didn't apply for funding is because of how I felt, knowing that you were waiting on something from us that we couldn't give you at the time. And as soon as we are in a space where we can, I'm looking forward to applying for funding and enhancing our relationship as we continue to do the work we do in this community.
And not funding would be the consequence, you know, not the next time not getting the audits in, you know, isn't that a consequence, not being able to apply for funding?
I just have a point of information. Where does that, from staff, I just need to know, where does that put us as a board when agencies don't bringing their audits in? Because I know that we have our own, you know, our own auditing that has to happen, right? So what kind of, do you see what I'm saying? This is not a should we or shouldn't we from like a, like, I love everything I know of the Well experience. And I hear you. I'm speaking to the, yeah, you can't see me, but I'm over here. And I'm trying to talk to you face to face. I hear what you're saying, and I receive it with the earnestness that you brought it. I just kind of want to know from like a logistics standpoint, because I'm a finish line kind of girl myself. What does that mean as far as what happens in our office?
Well, so we're not beholden to the state to submit a report about timeliness of audits. This is our financial accountability policy. In our policy, the board has the authority to relax any rule it chooses. So I think that's why these discussions are public and not, these are not staff, you know, with the door shut, figuring something out. Like, this is your authority, not ours. So that said, the one thing that kind of pops out, you've sort of walked us to this very strange situation that we're in, which is that if there was a finding in our own audit, which is part of the county's combined audit, it would be by the same people who are performing the audit for this agency. This is one of the other really adverse effects of not having enough people doing this work. And I have had phone calls from the very person working on this audit about a different agency with regard to our portion of the county's audit, like a few years ago. And it was quite a strange situation to be in. I felt like I needed to get a lawyer, but you know what I mean? Like, we could have a negative finding in the county's audit as a result of not having completed audits, but that's not happened yet.
There's not enough good auditors in Champaign County.
So I guess just to play devil's advocate a little bit, if there is either a small agency that has a lot of, we fund say a large portion, six figures, and they're requesting the release of funding, and it's a similar situation. I know we say we're going to take it in a case-by-case basis, but at what point would we say no if it's a similar situation such as this? I don't think there's an easy answer. I'm just curious to hear what other people's thoughts are.
I guess I don't have necessarily an answer to that in terms of my thoughts, but I guess one thing I was considering is if we released half of the requested amount, and then the agency was able to bring us an update next month when the audit is supposed to be due back to them. You know, we are going to be having a meeting next month that apparently I will be running as would that, because it would be, you know, we'd be releasing like 2 months worth of payments, and then 1 month later could hear an update and potentially release more, depending on what that update is. Could that be a reasonable compromise plan? I'm putting it out there. I'm not necessarily like glomming onto it as like, this is what I want to for sure do, but I'm throwing it out there as an idea, considering the timeline of we have the opportunity next month if the agency can provide us an update in advance of the agenda creation. That we could hear, you know, how the progress has been.
So I'm hearing the main concern is we're setting a precedent here, and we're concerned about what we're going to do later in the same situation.
So I think for me, I have a few thoughts of past experiences in my mind, and I want to have some kind of safety net in case there's issues that arise. I don't know if I want to name the agencies in the past, but like, I remember Rattle the Stars we had to get money back from, and then Dream was an issue.
It worked out,
yeah. But we didn't know for a long time that was going to work out, and that was a little stressful. So those are kind of my past experiences of wanting to have something there that if for some reason there's issues, not stuck trying to go back and fix things that are a little more difficult than after we release payments or all the payments. But that's just my thought. Not that I expect that to happen. I agree with everything everyone else has said. If everyone decides they want to release full payments, I'm fine with that. But those are just my thoughts.
Well, I was thinking of Rattle the Stars too, and that created bad feeling everywhere among us and with the people involved in the agency. It was not pleasant at all extracting the money back. Yeah. Well, they wouldn't give it back, and then it went on. I don't know how.
We had to contact their board members, yeah, saying that they're responsible for the funding, yeah, if they don't.
Yeah.
If the person that was running it was not going to return the funding. And then that finally got
either way.
The thing
boards
resolved.
Are individually and collectively liable for the yeah, funds, not the director. Yeah. Like yeah, we should have started with the board, but the information we had about the board members was not up to date. So I did a lot of like sleuthing, and I don't like the life of a private investigator. So I appreciate, like, that if we have processes in place, that's better than, yeah. But we do have a list of agencies who have not completed audits, which, because they weren't getting funding the next year, so there was no incentive, and they're just not eligible for funding. And there is a common characteristic among those agencies, which suggests maybe that we should have a category of different financial accountability standards for small agencies. It's interesting that this is the value, but we can't, our accountability standards are too high to support the value. So we have tried putting support in place, like by paying for an accountant to help agencies, and that did help a little bit, but it didn't solve the whole problem. It's not the level of involvement that small agencies might really need. So anyway, it's a topic for the future, but that's all we have right now, is the incentive is lack of eligibility. So
there was a category, wasn't there? But it was for agencies that were more like parent groups when I was on the disabilities board, and the amount of money was very small, and they didn't have to do an audit. It was like $30,000 or less for their budget. But we just had the two categories, as I recall.
Yeah. I'm finding releasing all payments but 1 month. I think 1 month is like almost $9,000 or $10,000 then. Or no, is it less than that?
There's like,
yeah,
the June payment is usually a few dollars more than the others.
Oh, okay.
So it might be like the most productive 8,000 would be you guys just decide 8,000. A number you feel good with.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, it's 8.25 per month, $8,250, around that. But
so you're suggesting that we release all the funds except for the 8,000.
Yeah, except for June.
Change.
Yeah. And hopefully that's enough of incentive to finish the audit.
I can get on board with any of the scenarios that we just talked about.
Yeah.
So the payments were $8,333 each month until the June payment, and I think it was like $8,336. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you could.
We just said the June payment.
Do this arbitrarily if you like.
And then we can say, you know, pending and we can say the June payment will be released pending review by. Mental health board staff.
So you could. So, and no one has put a motion on the floor or table. I don't know how the words. You could change the motion to say release March, April, and May payments.
Yeah.
Because
then automatically you're going to release June once the audit is completed and everything's done. We don't have to make a motion.
Oh,
for that,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And how much would that be for March, April, and May?
Those would be
Yeah,
yeah, about 25,000.
It's like 24,999. Yeah. I don't know. This is, they're in the payment schedule. They were presented as 8333 for each month, and then the catch up is June. But you can do this however you like. If you wanted to just say March, April, and May payments, it would be just under 25.
Are people okay with that plan, or? Oh, we were thinking about maybe releasing all payments except for June, and then this way there's 1 month there of incentive to just finish the audit.
Yeah, I would be in favor of that.
Okay. All right, so I'll move for a motion to authorize the CCMHB staff to release March, April, and May of June 2023 payments for the well experience.
You said June.
Oh, sorry. I'll move for a motion to authorize the CCMHB staff to release the March, April, and May of 2023 payments for the well experience contract MHB 23-068 for the well family care program totaling.
You don't.
Oh, yeah, I don't. Yeah. Yeah. Was there a second?
Seconded.
All right. Any further discussion? No? All right. Can I get a roll call, please?
Lisa Liggins Chambers.
Yeah, here. Yes, I'm sorry.
Chris Miner.
Yes.
Molly McClay.
Yes.
Elaine Palencia.
Yes.
Jen Straub.
Yes.
John Paul Joachim.
Yes. All right. Motion passes. All right, good work, team.
Thank you all so much.
You're very welcome. Again, we appreciate all the work that you guys do. The next item is the old business, so the MHB PY25 awards by priority, just for information on pages 118 to 119. Do you have any comments for that, Lynn? All right. Since we've already gone through that very thoroughly in previous meetings, we'll go on to PY23 demographics and residency data for funded programs on pages 120 through 145. Again, just for information only.
So this is just like to support and continue the conversation that y'all have been having since probably April about just what do the demographics look like. I put the grade column is just general population data, which comes from it's a combination of 2023 estimates and 2022 estimates. So it's not perfect, but and then I. As Chris Miner and I were talking about prior to the meeting, we always want to be cautious with comparisons to general population because this does not show you like where poverty, this is not a perfect intersection with poverty, which is where we really want to point the services. And I believe the agencies do so. It's just that we're not collecting data which can prove that. So some other cautions about the data are that the services are all different from each other, and there are a few instances where the agency is reporting to you about all of the people served in their program, even if there's other revenue in the program. So the numbers look bigger than they do for a program which only has mental health board funding. So behind all of these data are other conversations. But we can. This is also for PY23, which is a long time ago, and by, as Chandra said, by October, we'll have lots of good data for you about the year that's just ending. But we'll still have those cautions about them.
I do like that you put the general population numbers next to it, so you can know what to compare it to. Even though, again, like you said, this is the whole. This is just the program, not the whole. Agency.
And one of the reasons that we just recently asked you to let us change what we're asking about zip codes is that a million years ago when we were simply just asking for zip code data, you really could kind of drill down into poverty, but you can't now with these zip codes. It's really the census tracts are more reliable for that, and we're still not asking. So we want to make it a little easier on the agencies to report residency since we're not getting what we used to get from those data.
I thought this was laid out in a very cool way, and I agree that having the general population data kind of right next to the programs to be able to compare was very helpful. I think I was just kind of going through and doing a comparison kind of across one like demographic point and just looking at how all the programs were doing. I think it could take, you know, I probably sit down and just like visit this document regularly to like refresh my memory on how everything's doing.
Is there a way, I mean, I love the general population, but like, for instance, Rosecrans, it could be anyone, but the general population isn't the actual population they serve. So it really skews the stats big time. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? They don't serve the general population as Champaign. So it really, yeah.
So you're saying it should be different than that?
Yeah.
So I think that you're right. I think that's true of all, that really they're, that's where our, I mean, we used to ask for income information like a long time ago, but we have stopped.
Yeah, being a PhD researcher, I understand that can be kind of weird to get to certain stuff like that, exactly those numbers. But aren't they on their intakes? I mean,
it's just we don't, we're not asking. I think there's a lot more data in every house than what we're, when we're asking for. So, yeah.
I think a number that would be really nice to have next to all these other numbers, another line, is poverty. You know, how many are...
We'd have to ask them.
I know. That's the issue, right? Because next to age, next to race, next to ethnic origin, okay. If you had, you know, socioeconomic status, you know, how many were at the federal poverty line, right? Then that would really give you an idea, are we serving the proportion of our community that is lower socioeconomic status that requires... may have more needs, you know.
I think that we probably could just ask, hey, can you give us, you know, like we're not requiring it, but I imagine that a lot of agencies are asking for it because...
I don't know if it's something that we need from the agencies. It's for the county, right?
Oh,
like
what?
The county's numbers for these age groups and these, you know, races and ethnic
origins.
Yeah,
we can't, yeah. Yeah, we can do that. Well, that I do kind of know some of that already offhand, and so I was looking, when I was putting this together, I was feeling happy about some of the results, because it's the very young and the very old who are in poverty here, so that was, some of our agency programs really are reaching those. But that, yes, we could do that. But the zip code thing is so frustrating, because it's really census tract, and I don't understand all that. So, but that's where you really can, anyway.
Because I think the biggest thing for us is always sometimes of like, you know, the agency is serving, say, you know, the same proportion that of African Americans that are in the county, but they may have more, we may have more African Americans in a lower socioeconomic status that require more needs, resources. And so then really you're underserving that portion of the population or like the Hispanic population. And, you know, and so it says, oh, we're, you know, we're reaching 6.8%, but really... the need may be 14% that are at the federal poverty line. Mm-hmm. So really, we should be hitting them high at a higher percentage than we are. And so that's just my
Can
my
I make a point just to make sure that we're careful? Because there still is a segment of the population that will not get quality care because of who they are. Not connected to their poverty, not connected to their income bracket, none of those things. And so I just want us to be careful when we begin looking at who we're serving, how we're serving. There is still some underserved people that do not get quality care or care because of who they are. Whether it be their family's culture, whether it be their gender, whether it be their race, whether it be all types of things. And so I just want us to kind of keep that in front of us instead of going deep into, are we caring? I'm not saying like we not pay attention to it, but just understand that there are some people that may not have access to things because of who they are.
I
pause the screen on the well experience. These are data to be really happy about, like the distribution of services across age groups is really beautiful. There's a really good reach to Black women, which was something this agency promised. So I just want to like help you feel good about the last action that you took. And then they're reaching people in Rantoul, which has been a sort of constant cry of the mental health board is how can we get more services to folks in Rantoul. So anyway, just like so, there is some good news in these data, given all the limitations. And the other good news is that the tool is set up, like the Excel spreadsheet is set up, so that it will take me quite a bit less time to plug in PY24 data once we have it.
So I guess my only thing is to kind of just reiterate the Rosecrans issue in the beginning. Looking at the programs, there's some that serve 0.75% Latino origin on page 140. You know, some that serve 19%, some that serve 6, 4, 18, another one that served 4. So, I mean, like 4 out of 6 of their programs served, less than the general population of the Hispanic portion of Champaign County. And that was the original concern during the application discussions and the funding of these. So I do appreciate, what they said with their staff being people of color and different backgrounds, especially those, that are clinicians and those with lived experiences. But at the same time, that is omitting the concern, which was the Hispanic or Latino origin, and they did not comment on that. And so I don't think they heard that, or they're making this argument that I didn't feel like they were responding to our concerns, and I do want them to hear that that was the concern. And so if they want to address that in the future, I'm definitely happy to hear that. But that is a concern that we've had. And I just want to make sure that they're taking it as constructive criticism on how to improve, a spot that we feel like needs improvement. And if they want to do a quality improvement project to look at how they're going to reach out to more, obviously they have some programs that do reach out to, Hispanic and Latino populations, at a large percentage, like the Child and Family Program and the Recovery Home. So obviously they have had success, so they probably know how to make those other programs successful if they were successful in a couple other programs, and they have to learn from those and use that, whatever they learn from those programs, to the other programs that may not have as much outreach. And so that's the point I want them to take home.
If you look, 3 of the 4 that have a lower rate are the ones which take referrals from law enforcement. So that's specialty courts, crisis co-response, and criminal justice. So that's internal to those systems, like why the low engagement of Hispanic and Latino people. But the benefits case management one is still sticking out there as room for improvement, for sure. But, I don't know the answer. But it's curious that it's the 3 with law enforcement referrals.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Are you saying that the percentages or the numbers are low for those, mm-hmm. for 19 to 59? Or where are you viewing that information?
Not the age, the portion that is Hispanic or Latino, because that was the original concern.
So the rate, if you compare the general population rate of 6.8% with each of the programs' rate, the only 2 which are reaching a greater portion are Recovery Home and Child and Family Services. The others are lower. But my point was just that
referrals are restricted for those three, and they're restricted to the systems like the drug court has a very specific intake route, and jail is the criminal justice referral source, and then crisis is crisis co-response with law enforcement.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and kind of looking at, I was kind of just like looking at all of the programs, and a lot of the programs are serving a smaller number of Hispanic or Latino origin individuals than the general population. But there's some programs that are serving like a much greater number, like I believe Courage Connection was one.
Don Meyer Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah. So that is interesting. I saw like...
And Win Recovery. Yeah. Just a little bit, though, So, yeah, I mean, I guess, obviously, our biggest issue was with the benefits case management because of the bottleneck, Child and Families had the no wait, right? Whichever one, there was two issues. One was not having enough outreach to the Hispanic and Latino population in the county. The other was the bottleneck of the mental health clinician being able to do the evaluation to see the telehealth psychiatrist. I forget which program that was.
That's Child and Family.
Child and Family Services, yeah. So, but yeah, so those are the two main issues. But yeah.
Oh, I was paying attention to Stephanie talking about her agency and looked around and saw that Rosecrans left. And I had a couple of questions for them. So I'm glad you brought up the fact that they're steering around the issue. That's what they're doing, you know, suggesting that 40% of individuals for their agency are of color. What does that mean? That would be my question, you know, because to me that can mean you have 35% of individuals working for your agency that's Latino American versus 1%. You know, African-American. So that would be my question, you know, but they left. The other thing is they're not listening to us, you know, showing up to these meetings and giving us a rundown of the percentages of the individuals that work in the agency. It's exactly what you were talking about. It doesn't address the problem. The reason I asked about the demographics when they were here today is because their position in defending themselves about the types of people that work for them does not address what we see right here in front of us, which is the huge disparity in their treatment, in their outreach, in the population served. So until they can answer that question and show us that these numbers go up, we still need to hold them accountable. Because looking at the percentages here, not just for benefits, but even child and family, these numbers are too low for minorities.
Hi, this is Michelle Hibbard. I'm the Community Relations for Rosecrans for Central Illinois. So I'd be happy to pass on any of these questions if you feel that they weren't sufficiently answered. So if you don't mind repeating that again, exactly what it is that you're needing from us.
We've been talking repeatedly about Rosecrans and their outreach to the minority community. What is going on with the outreach? They come here and they talk about the type of staff or the race, color, or gender of the staff, but that's steering around the questions that the board has regarding their low numbers and what they're going to do moving forward to increase those numbers for their minority clients. This is a huge agency, and so if they're serving the entire population, then these numbers should look better. And so going forward, we want to know as a board, well, what are you going to do about it?
Well, I can tell you, considering the outreach is actually I've only been in the position for a year, so I will let me at least qualify some of my experience and some of what I have done is I have made continuous effort to obviously work within the community with public health, with CSPH, with Strides, within the schools, making myself available, working with other organizations, working with some of those See You at Home, Courage Connection, trying to think of some of these other other community partners that obviously serve those that are at a disadvantage, necessarily maybe don't have the means, don't understand how it is to even access substance use or mental health services. So I will say that I'm obviously new, but I'm always open to any other, if there's things that you feel that we are not doing, or maybe there's something that maybe we should adopt, I am more than willing to listen and hear whatever suggestions that you might have, considering that I am relatively new to this role.
Go ahead. I've heard it mentioned a couple times you're in the schools. Exactly what schools are you in, and what are you doing in those schools here in Champaign? You may not know specifically because I think you're regional, but can we get that information?
Certainly. That would be from our prevention program, but I can certainly get that information and have that provided to you for the next meeting.
Actually, take that back. We're not funding that program, so I don't have the right to ask for that. I apologize.
Oh, right. Yeah, Okay, but sure.
Yeah, I believe we used to fund that program and then stopped funding it. That was before I was on the board, but I just wanted to note that. I guess my understanding was from the comments today that they were responding to specific questions from last meeting, but I wasn't clear on what the questions were that they were responding to from the last meeting, because last meeting there was also a presentation during the citizen input, and I thought that was about demographics of the populations they're serving, and then that this time they came back to share information about demographics about the staff because they were asked for it, but I don't remember exactly how that went down at the previous meeting.
I did happen to read the transcripts for the last meeting because I was unable to attend, and I wanted to familiarize myself with the activity. Unfortunately, this might be my second meeting, but to be honest with you, I might have attended last year, and this is going to be my second, so I do apologize. But I can tell you I did read the transcripts, and from what I understood, it did sound like you were asking what the makeup of was the staff. That's the way I did not go through it because there was like 60 pages of transcription to go through. So I did go through it rather quickly. So that might have just been a misunderstanding because it sounded to me like you were asking about the makeup of our staff. But I can certainly go back and and ask them about, obviously, if we can provide a breakdown of the demographics of the clients served in Champaign County. I believe that we should be able to provide that information.
And us asking about staff, but I kind of understand. Okay. Yeah, I think maybe it's because we were talking about reaching the communities and stuff, and maybe better if it was representative. So I understand why you might have thought we wanted that information. So.
Well, but I remember, Lisa, you asked the question because the issue was just knowing how many, I mean, you could say this, but how many staff are, African-American doesn't say what positions they're in. And so that was the original question, whether we're talking about, custodial staff or counselors or what. And then today, what was given to us was white, black, as if there are no Latino staff at Rosecrans. So that was odd to me.
Well, like they were trying being to Latino, I can tell you, there's at least one. I can tell you that.
That's not good enough for me. I apologize.
I did not mean to make light of the situation, but fine. I do know that there are other Latino that are working. I did think she did actually do more of a breakdown, and it wasn't just representative of just the white and black. But to be honest with you, that was a little bit ago, and so I might have missed that. But I can certainly provide that information if you would like to know that.
Oh, no, I have it. I wrote it down. The leadership team is 48% of color, 52% white. Nurses made up, I think she broke down the
100% of color.
Yeah, 100% color. Yeah. Clinical staff, 40% of color, 61% white.
Yeah.
I wrote down a lot of stats that she mentioned, and again, she only talked about of color, you know, versus white. Okay. However, the broader point...
If you would like me to have that broken down as to exactly what color we're speaking of, I can certainly do that.
And maybe how many are actually clinical staff, like you are, reaching out in the community? Because I'll tell you, I've been in the community for a while. I lived here twice. I'm a member of a large, you know, congregation here, and I don't see you all reaching out in our community. Maybe you are. Because you are, you know, that's a part of your position. But these numbers show me that we do need some type of support, you know, for Rosecrans to help you all get out into the community to increase services and to increase these numbers. Because they're very low for the minority community.
I think one thing I would just add is, you know, Lynn kind of pointed out something that I didn't realize till now is that, you know, for the criminal justice, the crisis co-response, and the specialty courts, you know, those are from the referral from the, you said from the police departments, correct?
It's different for each.
Correct.
Yeah, different.
Criminal justice is jail.
Yeah.
And then crisis co-response is various law enforcement agencies, and then specialty courts is court services.
Yeah, so those may be out of something out of their control more, and we have to maybe ask those specific organizations, hey, why are you not referring? You know, is that just because there's a lack of numbers, or is there because you aren't having interpreters come to talk with them and if they want those resources because that takes more work and more time? So that's just interesting questions. Then maybe to move on to that next thing, you know, the child and family services, you know, it says 19.5% Black or African American, but there's 34% other. So it'd be nice to know what that specific demographic is. And same thing for recovery home, because that kind of skews the numbers a little bit, makes it harder, less clear about what.
Usually that's.
Oh, go ahead. Is that.
Other is a category that is increasingly taken advantage of by people who. Identify two races or more, like, or they don't like the question.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's an alternative to not answering the question. Okay. To especially younger people have been liking that one.
Basically, from my perspective, the only program here of these six that really is an issue that Rosecrans should be dealing with head on is the benefits case management, because that is the one that is the lowest.
And what a great
And then the other three that are through the criminal justice system, I think we should then work with them to reach out to those entities to figure out what is that discrepancy there. Is it because there's a lack of individuals, or is it because there is some kind of barrier in getting those individuals into the program?
Yeah, because it seems like different programs have different areas where they're not reaching an appropriate level of specific communities, like benefits case management seems to be for Hispanic and Latino individuals. The child and family seems like it maybe isn't reaching as many on Black individuals, but it seems to be reaching more on Hispanic or Latino individuals. So there's like, it's not the same issue across programs. And then of course there's the sort of when the programs are specifically reaching people that are referred from other sources, that seems to be kind of its own thing. I did want to mention, going back to the staff demographics, I appreciated the breakdown of the types of staff that were provided, like leadership, clinical, nursing, and dividing between white and people of color is not enough information, just to kind of clarify some of and kind of summarize some of the comments that we were discussing. Like, more information on that would be helpful.
All right. So just remind people it's 7:30. So if we want to move on to the next item.
Before we move on, just one.
Go ahead. One last thing.
Well, Chandra and Leon have a meeting with them. Is it Friday? So hopefully the UL, I mean, yeah. Like, I think it is about this, mm-hmm. right? Okay.
So, again, the bigger issue is how they're reporting and communicating even just the data that I extracted from their reports. And I've given a couple of the board members, not everyone yet, actual copy of previous reports when there was another staff actually capturing the information. And so I just want to make sure like that we're mm-hmm. mindful of how it's being communicated. And even in my feedback and comments, mm-hmm. I was like, this is very different. Just mm-hmm. so I just need to get some questions answered on what is actually being reported anymore. Mm-hmm. Is it because someone does not know? Is it because of other things? But the questions that are specific to what engagement looks like, and even with engagement in the churches, in our community, that do house Black populations and other populations, there's also some other barriers that can also inhibit engagement. Mm-hmm. And so when you know that, and I do know that, and have had to have conversations honestly with people that were trying to engage them, there are different ways. And it's all connected to relationships. And so if we're really honest, and if you do not have relationships in those communities, it's just to say, oh, this service is here. There has to be some type of bridge and some type of connection mm-hmm. consistently. And that may not always happen for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And so just have an honest conversation about that, which is why I want you to be careful not to just lean it to income, because there are people not getting served that are very wealthy because of someone in the door that does not provide quality care. But that's not our lane as funders. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that, you know, we just let them know and just things that they can be mindful of. Yeah.
And this is why I wanted to have that breakdown of the percentages that they shared today, because I think that's really important, and it kind of piggybacks off of what you just mentioned, because if, for example, someone walks through the door and they don't find anyone that looks like them, then more than likely they're going to exit out and never take the help. So that can contribute to the problem as well. So,
or even if the person that does not look like them squints up their face, or the person that does look like them squints up their face. I've been in both situations. So I just, like I said, just wanted us to just be mindful again that underserved are not just poor people. There are people that are very connected and able to get resourced and are not getting services from people because of who they are.
I appreciate all the discussion today. It's, you know, something that there's not easy solutions to. It takes a lot of work, a lot of effort, and then also self-reflection as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a process. You have to continuously do it, you know. But yeah, I appreciate all this discussion. So a lot of stuff to think about. So I won't make this meeting any longer. Let's keep, we can move on to the next item, which is the evaluation capacity building on pages 146 to 210. If Dr. Oh. So, Rachel, okay, thank you.
So Rachel is here, and Dr. Dariotis is also on the Zoom. I want to say that Rachel, are you on the Zoom too? All right. Okay, that was the question. Thanks.
Okay. Do I just keep this button pressed? Okay, great. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. And get the slideshow going. All right. Can you all see that okay? So admittedly, this conversation is probably not as important as what you all were just talking about. So it's good to hear the different conversations going on in the community. So Thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to sharing our findings from our year one needs assessment report. And I'm going to bring it back to something Lynn said earlier about going on a long journey with data, and I have to admit that got me a little excited. you know, maybe not so much the being tired of taking surveys, because who doesn't love a good survey? But with that said, I'm going to go ahead and get started here. And so Jacinda and I like to start with gratitude and appreciation, because we're really grateful to get to do this work. And so a special thanks to the board members and staff who have been a part of this work, agency staff and leaders, our collaborator who I think was present at the last developmental disabilities meeting, Dr. Nate Underland, who's been helping with some of the video and communications pieces. Special thanks to research and evaluation assistants Sophia Shazia and Sloan Ward, who are students working on the project. And of course, funding with Dr. Dariotis for the Champaign County Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Boards. So thank you. This presentation, we're going to try to keep it a little bit high level, and you can find all the really good, juicy details about program evaluation in the annual report that you should all have access to now. And so I will start with the takeaways and then move on to the broader context, discuss some of the key findings that we saw at a high level and share some quotes that we have, and talking about moving to next steps. And then I'll rehash the takeaways and we'll share one of the micro-learning videos that we've created as a result of this project. So we'll start with the takeaways. The key things that we heard was that agencies and boards want to be heard, and so we are using participatory approaches for needs and action plans. Agencies and boards want resources to be able to do this work, right? We know that. And then we do want to work together in acknowledging that communities of practice and open communication are really important as we move forward and improve program evaluations as well as the services being provided in this community. So our overarching goal here is to build evaluation capacity of Champaign County Mental Health and Developmental Disability Boards and agencies using participatory and empowerment approaches, and I'll go over what that entails in a couple slides. And the year one goal was to determine agency and board needs, strengths, and expectations for our team's roles and activities in future years, and then start to move to action. And so really thankful that we got to start to move to action in year one. And so I'll share a little bit more about our approach. So the first piece is that it's participatory. And so the goal of the participatory approach is to center the voices of staff and different perspectives that are really integral to doing this work in order to develop a holistic understanding of capacity, what's going well, what could need additional support, and something our team can provide and help give that perspective from hearing from everyone. And then the empowerment is where that capacity building piece comes in. And we're looking at boards and agencies to implement and sustain these practices. So we're working closely with a few agencies, and we'll talk more about that as well. And the goal is ultimately that we have continuous learning organizations. Here's a quick visual discussing what it means to do participatory approaches. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with research, a lot of the traditional approaches to research fall more into that helicopter science type of category that you see on the left of the screen, which is more like doing research to communities or for communities, as opposed to when we shift to the right, doing research with and by communities, with the goal of having that be more of our directive with moving forward with capacity building in this setting. And here is an outline of what empowerment evaluation looks like. And so we want to achieve the outcomes, which is depicted on the left. But in order to do that, we need to understand the current level of capacity and what tools, trainings, and technical assistance are needed to move forward towards our goals here. And so that's why it was really critical for us to spend so much time figuring out what was going on, what were the needs were, what the strengths were, so we could then build on that for those action steps.
And so we were able to collect data and perspectives from a lot of different sources. And so we did 13 interviews and focus groups with agency leaders, board members, and previous evaluators. We did one group level assessment that captured perspectives from 19 agencies, 33 staff, and 250 collective years of experience with over 2,000 insights, meaning we had over 2,000 data points that we generated from this event, which we were really excited about and spent. This was when I started working here, and I really got to dig into all the good stuff right away. And then we shifted to a survey after the GLA. We also did one before, and that was to sort of gauge what was going on and to direct some of the GLA pieces and figure out what went well with the GLA afterwards. Part of this also involved 64 agency reports being reviewed by our team to figure out what outcomes were being measured, and additionally using that to figure out what was going well, what could use additional work. And ultimately, we had, I'm going to minimize this here, we had 76 perspectives included from agency staff, agency leaders, and evaluators. And sorry, it looks like maybe you can still move that around here. Okay. So we were really pleased with the number of people who showed up to be a part of this year of needs assessment, because it helped us understand what was going on in the community and what was going on with these agencies. We are very excited. And so this is me stewing over 2,000 data points. and it was really good. And it's colorful, so it makes my office look pretty. And so here's a little bit about how we handled the data that we received. So we read and the interviews and focus group transcripts to look for the key ideas as a part of them. We reviewed open-ended questions from survey data. We reviewed those 64 agency reports. And then for that group level assessment, the analysis takes place in the session, as well as our team going back and doing a secondary analysis. But you can see a picture from the group level assessment session here. And the prompts are up on the walls if you weren't there, and the prompts related to evaluation type topics and figuring out what's going on here. And so just short responses, and then people get to read and reflect and develop their own ideas and themes as a result of this event. And so here's a high-level version of what we learned from all of this data. And the first piece here is that we don't know what we don't know. Familiarity with evaluation varies. And so sometimes when we spoke with people, we found that they were using a lot of good evaluation practices, but maybe didn't have the language that we use to describe it coming from an academic setting. We found that some people really didn't have a lot of experience doing evaluation, and just across the board trying to figure out what language do we need to use to see if they are using those evaluation practices, and if not, what language should we use to engage them. And so some recommendations we had here were figuring out what evaluation resources will be most useful to individual agencies, compiling and creating evaluation resources, and for agencies, making time and space to participate in these capacity building activities, and then for the board to communicate with agencies about why evaluation capacity building is important. Our next theme was that user-friendly evaluation training is needed and all parties are receptive to learning. So what we heard from different groups of people was that people are really receptive to learning these evaluation strategies, and that was reassuring to us because that's our goal here. And so we want to meet people where they are, figure out where they were, which was the point of the needs assessment, and then work from there. And so everyone was willing. And we have this quote here: I'm new to the nonprofit world, and I'm excited to have the chance to absorb the different vocabulary, focus points relating to evaluation, reporting, versus the more corporate background that I come from. And that was someone from an agency. And so identifying where people might have a good idea of how to do things, but maybe don't have the same jargon, figure out what is actually expected in this field, and so on and so forth. And so this is helping us inform our micro learnings. So we're going over logic models, selecting outcome measures, and there's a long list here of ideas. And we're working with a working group, which was an action item that came from this too, to help us inform what other topics will be the most important moving forward. And then again, for the board and agency recommendations, providing feedback on training and resource materials. The third key idea we had here was giving back time via evaluation tools and efficiencies. So we know that we can't actually give people time. I wish I could. I wish I could, you know, just be like, poof, here is an extra hour. Wouldn't that be lovely? And so recognizing that agency staff have limited time and capacity, and that this is often one of 10 things that is needed to be done in a day, and it's not often the main goal of what their day might look like. And so our hope is that we can develop evaluation efficiencies, like standardized data tools, to help make things move a little smoother and hopefully give back some of that time. We end up providing a lot of support from our office, and we are not equipped to do it, but it creates some cross purposes for us. We cannot help people fill out their reports and then be the ones evaluating the reports. It's really a challenge, but increasingly we are called to help new agency leaders understand their jobs. And so highlighting where a group like an evaluation team might be able to step in and provide support. And so we're providing intensive technical assistance to a few selected agencies. Our hope is to help create institutionalized knowledge where if someone leaves the agency, that the practices will be withstanding of those changes, and training in best practices in data collection and management. And hopefully, again, for agencies, making that time and space to implement recommendations, developing a shared evaluation strategy, and then for the board, providing funds to cover the cost of quality evaluation strategies or activities, including external support if internal support is not available. And something else that came up here was the exploration of the feasibility of a linked data system. And so that's a really big and separate conversation, but that's something that came up that we were discussing as well, and whether it would be feasible and useful and something that people would want. And then the last piece here is ensuring that there's appropriate time frames allotted for seeing program effects for the evaluations and reporting. The fourth key idea that we took away was developing capacity for storytelling and effective reporting. And so storytelling is really important. People like to take those snippets away and share them. They can be used for lots of different reasons. But our hope is that we can help use evaluation methods to share program stories and improve reporting. And we are hearing that that's what agencies want. They want to be able to use data to share stories that are meaningful to them, displaying the importance of their work, and also what you all want to hear as well. And here's a quote that sort of encompasses that. We are a relatively small organization and have a hard time gathering data from all of our participants. So I have found qualitative data, so textual data, to be the most informative. Talking with families, participants, and staff, and using those rich stories to inform my decision-making process is probably the most useful. It would be nice to have more quantitative data to back this up, but getting that with consistency has been challenging. And so, moving towards those recommendation pieces, we're working on quantitative and qualitative capacity building and potentially mixing those methods. And for agencies, making time and space. And for the board, the recommendation was simplified and refined previous report templates. And that was something that has been done, and the agency staff had reported finding useful and helpful and something they were thankful for. And then another recommendation there is providing concrete examples of expected outcomes, including openness to qualitative narrative and quantitative findings. And the last piece here is adopting a mindset of we're all in this together. And the essence of this is aligning expectations, cross-agency collaboration, and evaluation team engagement to advance evaluation and move to outcomes. So really harnessing everyone's abilities, skills, and talents to come together to figure out how to move forward, to move to the outcomes that we all want to see in the community. I think keeping us board members more in the loop, like maybe telling us, you know, giving a report at each of our meetings, like what's going on, what are you doing? And so that's why I'm here. So hopefully this is helpful to hear what we've been working on. And the recommendations, so those progress updates, brief agency overview videos was something we've talked about as well, where we're highlighting what some of the agencies are doing that could be used for multiple purposes. For agencies, volunteering to participate in the working group or learning community, and so we've started meeting with that group, and they've been showing up and coming up with ideas, and that's been really fun to move forward as well. And then for boards and agencies, improving communication channels for shared goal and expectation setting. And so shifting to that moving to empowerment piece here, and these were from the pictures you saw with the sticky notes. These were some of the sticky notes we saw in response to a prompt that says, tell me about your experience with evaluation. And we have this continuum here that says, don't follow me, I'm just a hamster on a hamster wheel, all the way to, you got this. And so hopefully as a part of this empowerment process, moving to that, you got this, you know, sort of cheerleader mentality. So our next steps, intensive technical assistance, on-demand micro-learnings, which you'll get a sneak peek coming up next, that are accessible to everyone, and we're getting feedback on those as we go here, gaining feedback and guidance from that working group, developing workshops and trainings, and implementing recommendations that have been identified as being the most important to moving this work forward. And so to reiterate those takeaways that we have is that agencies and boards want to be heard, we want resources, and we want to work together. So, and featured here is my dog, Mozzie, and I'm very excited to share this one on overpromising and under-delivering and talking about how to select outcomes that we want to report on. So I'm going to, let's see, do you know if I need to remain muted? We'll give it a go.
We'll find out soon.
Okay. All right.
Today we're going to talk about how to avoid overpromising and underdelivering when it comes to program evaluation. You will learn some tips to implement when you're writing grant applications or similar items. And by the end of this video, we hope you understand how to focus on a few top priority outcomes that are achievable within the reporting period. This video will use a metaphor to walk through some of these tips. We will introduce you to a hypothetical project called Canines for Our Minds.
Give me one second. I think it's maybe sharing a different screen. Okay.
Canines for Our Minds is a dog training and therapy program for people who experience PTSD. And the program has three steps. These are steps that a trainer, psychologist, and a dog owner will go through together. The first step is a basic command program in which the dog learns new tricks. The second is an advanced dog training program that takes it to the next level. And the third are therapy sessions involving the dog and a clinician for 1 year. We have different outcomes targeted for each of these steps. For this hypothetical example, we're going to focus on how to avoid overpromising and underdelivering in the first stage of the program, basic command training. This is Mozzie. Mozzie needs to learn some new tricks. Mozzie's trainer promises that he will know 20 tricks by the time he finishes the program. 20 tricks, wow. I can't wait.
Thank you so much for trusting Mozzie to us. Mozzie learned how to sit, lay down, take a bow, raise the roof, stay, and come. Good boy, Mozzie. Yeah, so what do you think?
Wait a second. I thought you said 20 tricks. Okay, let's try this again. This is Mozzie. Mozzie's trainer promises that she will teach him the fundamentals, like sit, stay, and down. Wow, I wasn't expecting Mozzie to be able to speak and take a bow.
And so in the example we just went through, we talked about making sure we only promise the essential tricks. To take this example to the next level, we'll look at a hypothetical list of all the desired outcomes that might result from this program and considering all of the steps of the program. And so we're hoping that this program results in reduced severity of symptoms, PTSD remission, improved sleep, improved well-being, knowledge on how to handle service animals, skills on how to optimize service animal experience, improving interpersonal relationships, and tools for fostering self-care and resilience. Some of these outcomes could be measured pretty quickly, but some we might not expect to see for a longer period of time. And so being able to report on all of these outcomes would require a really long survey at different time points or other forms of assessment. And that means it would take more capacity to develop, more energy from the participant, and more capacity to analyze and report on those outcomes. Instead, we want to focus on, let's say, the three top priority outcomes for this program. So we decided that 90% of individuals should be able to report on reduced severity of symptoms, 90% of individuals report improved well-being, and 100% of individuals gain skills on how to optimize their service animal experience. These outcomes can be accurately measured using clinical assessment, self-reporting, and there are not so many that it would be too challenging to deliver on. Most programs like this hope to see a variety of outcomes, and it can be challenging to pick just a few. But focusing on the most important desired outcomes makes it easier to deliver what we hope to see. Here are some tips for ensuring we can deliver what we promise. Pick three outcomes that directly relate to program activities that can be ideally achieved and measured within the reporting period and can be measured with reliable and valid measurement tools. So if we think back to our three core examples, that 90% of individuals report reduced severity of symptoms, for example, we know that we expect to see a reduced severity of symptoms based on previous literature that says that dogs will help with severity of symptoms. We can also know that we can expect to see these outcomes within the reporting period, and we also know that there are reliable and valid measurement tools for assessing severity of symptoms and well-being. So stay tuned for a new micro-learning about choosing and measuring program outcomes. Thanks for watching.
So, you know, my dog is officially a part of the evaluation capacity building team, and I hope that his contributions are acknowledged. So that's just an example of one of the things that we've been working on. It's been fun, really, in figuring out what works for people. And we got feedback on this from multiple groups before we finalized it. So it went through lots of iterations of changes in there. But before I end, I do want to highlight, thank you so much. The agencies in this county are doing wonderful work, and we just see ourselves as, you know, one set of tools in the toolbox that can help support in moving towards the outcomes that we want to see in the community. So thank you again for the opportunity to be here and to do this project.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate everything you guys have done, you know, just improving the methodology of the agencies and how they function, and, you know, hopefully the evaluation efficiency that they do when they're evaluating their clients, and then, you know, increasing their program effectiveness. So I really appreciate, again, everything that you guys are doing.
Thank you. I'm happy to take any questions you all have. If they're hard, I'll field them to Jacinda.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. With that, we'll move on to the expo update on page 211. October 26th. Let's see. So I guess Halloween will be the Thursday after. Yeah. So will people go trick-or-treating on November 2nd? I don't know how, or do people go trick-or-treating on Thursday night? Thursday night? Okay, I don't have children, so I need to ask an expert. So,
I feel like you are among children enough to know this at this point.
I mean, I dress up on Halloween in our office. We all dress up. I mean, we have a theme every year.
Yeah.
We don't usually have candy. I mean, maybe. We usually have toys, like bouncy balls and stuff like that.
Fair. But yes, trick-or-treat is always celebrated here on Halloween Day,
Okay. Despite
it being a horrible idea.
Well, at least the next day is Friday. They're all going to be crashed on a sugar high and class, and then they can sleep it off. And although everyone should make sure they wear reflective gear when they're outside trick-or-treating. That's the number one injury is car accidents for kids running across the street. And flammable capes. Make sure your jack-o'-lanterns are not actually lit with candles inside. Maybe those little electric ones are probably safer for kids.
No,
everything's up. How's the fundraising for the expo going?
It's always kind of scary. It's gotten really difficult. I think we've had sort of a very small group discussion about, while the sponsorship opportunities seem fewer and harder to get, there are so many more health fairs and sort of like maybe target population specific expos that we're starting to use those as the marketing opportunity, which is good. And instead of being, you know, worried about them taking business away from our expo, we're connecting all the expos.
Because you
is
can't
cool.
donate online to the expo.
I know.
You have to like write a check
yes.
to somebody, which makes it hard for individuals to
donate. County treasurer made me some promises in the hallway, but also with the caution that she may not be here long enough to implement them for us to have credit card or online payment. Like she would really like to do that on behalf of our expo, but it's something, it's a, right? Like she's not going to be here forever.
So we can't just like donate the money to the mental health board and then you guys allocate the funding to
It would
the
still
expo.
Have to be a check. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really... Yeah. That is a barrier.
Because like if I send an email to like the doctors, you know, and that are pediatricians or the developmental pediatricians at Carl or psychiatrists at Carl, like they're gonna have to write a check and send it to who, you know? Just
oh,
that's,
to the mental health board.
Okay, but then
it is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood the.
Just saying that's still a lot harder though than just being able to like click, pull out my credit card, done. Like I have to go find my checkbook in my house somewhere. You know, the only time I use my checkbook is to pay the Champaign-Urbana, was it the Waterworks District thing? Because it's cheaper than paying online. I just use a stamp. Yeah. The Sanitary District. Thank you. That's what it is. But yeah, that's the only time I use my checkbook is for that and like Christmas and birthdays.
Yeah.
Did you have a... Oh, okay. All right. Any other questions, comments?
Enough with the jibber jabber.
Okay. All right. We'll move on to successes and other agency input. Any agencies out there or any individuals that would like to participate? We'll leave it up to 5 minutes. All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to board-to-board reports. Any board-to-board reports? No. Any? Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I did go to Community Coalition. I've already told you about the community assessment, needs assessment, but also on the sheriff reports that there's been an uptick in mental health and substance abuse problems in the jail. There's more than usual. And then the only other thing, I won't go through the whole list of things, but that Chief Boone did a presentation for Urbana crime in which he overlaid maps of where the shootings were, where the domestics are, domestic disturbances are, and it's all the same places, you know, and he said, and it's been there for 20 years, and so just, to, you know, the neighborhoods with poverty mostly and so on, so that's a focus of his is data gathering. So if we need those kinds of data, he's got them. That's all.
Any county board input? No. All right. Any?
No.
Any CCDDB input? Lynn?
No.
All right. And any board announcements?
No.
I just wanted to say, because I didn't get to accept nominations, but I just wanted to thank your trust in me for becoming president. I'm very excited to take on this role. I actually looked back, and yesterday was the 15-year anniversary of me setting foot in the School of Social Work for my MSW orientation. And I think it was cool to kind of have that coincide with now. Also, now I'm dating myself, and I probably, I know that I don't necessarily, people might have underestimated my age, or maybe overestimated. But anyway, I'm very excited, and I also wanted to thank Dr. Joachim for his service as the president of the board for 2 years. Even though you didn't know you were going to get nominated when you did, you did a great job, and we're glad to have you as vice president still, being in leadership. So thank you to Dr. Joachim.
Thank you.
And that is all.
With that, I will move to adjourn till next month. All right, enjoy your summer, guys.